Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market reported as the second day of April 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Harry Cooney will be here to look at the agricultural energy markets with us. And Don Day will close out our show. We'll take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Along the way, Dave Dickey will bring you the ag news for the day, and I'll tell you how this season farmers in parts of Iowa and Illinois will return to the use of soil insecticides to control the western corn rootworm right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on a Tuesday afternoon. Futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the May soft red winter wheat on its close, not a settlement, up six and rather up 3.5 cents. Settlement or close price at $6.67 and a half. July soft red at $6.75, up 6.5, and September there at $6.88 and a quarter, a dime higher for the afternoon. The hard red in Kansas City, and this is a settlement price. July futures 15.5 cents lower at $7.16 and 3/4 of a cent. Back in the corn pit from Chicago, nearby May futures 6.39 and a half, down 2 and 3/4. July at 6.27 and a half, up 3/4, and September at 5.55 in the corn pit, up 4 cents. December at 5.37 and a half, up 2, and the March corn at 5.49 and a half, up 4 1/4. May futures 5.54, a penny and a half higher. July of next year at 5.58, down 0.5 cent. From the soybeans, nearby contract 13.93 and a half, up 2 3/4 for the day. July beans 13.74 and a half, up 2 1/4. And the August 13.42, three higher. September futures up 2 3/4 at $12.86 and a quarter, and November at $12.48 and a half, down 4 1/4. January beans of next year, $12.61 and a half, 3 1/4 lower, or rather higher on their close. And the March contract at $12.66 for 2014, 3 3/4 higher. Bean meal futures at $4.02.50. That's up $4 for the afternoon. And bean oil at $49.60, down 46 cents. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at $127.42 and a half, a settlement down a penny, and or rather $1.32 and a half. April feeders at $144.72 and a half, 80 cents higher. And the lean hogs finished the April at $80.95, down 35 cents. This is, of course, the closing market report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures, May contract at $96.98 a barrel. That's down 9 cents. The RBOB gasoline at 303 and 4 tenths of a cent, 6 and 6 tenths of a cent lower. The ethanol at $2.38 and 8 tenths of a cent, up 2 and 7 tenths of a cent. The RBOB ran the difference between the two is 67 and 4 tenths of a cent. That's a dime narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.97, 4.5 cents lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel up a penny and a half at $3.08 and 3 tenths of a cent. And the gold futures on the day at $1,575.50 an ounce. The settlement price down $24.90. U.S. dollars at 82.91. up 0.18 on its last trade. Those, of course, are just about 10 minutes delayed. Let's take a look at the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 45 degrees on a northwest wind at about 7 miles an hour this afternoon. And then this evening, mostly clear, a low of 24. A north wind at 5 to 7 will remain. And tomorrow, sunny skies, a high of 50 degrees on an east-northeast wind at about 6 miles an hour. Wednesday evening, partly cloudy and 31. Thursday, sunny and 57. Thursday night, partly cloudy and 35. And on Friday, sunny skies and a high near 58 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 38. Saturday, partly sunny with a high of 64. Saturday evening, a chance of rain. Mostly cloudy and a low of 47. Sunday, partly sunny skies and a high near 61. Sunday evening, cloudy and a low of 44. And Monday of next week, for the start of the work week, a chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. It'll be cloudy with a high near 60 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour when we talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. Let's check in on the futures markets here for the closing market report. On the phone line from New Market, Indiana, is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. How are you today?
Well, good afternoon, Todd. It's a beautiful day over in the neighborhood here.
Oh,
so
it is just magnificent. Looks like it's going to stay that way, although it's going to get a bit warmer. That's nice. Maybe a bit more rainfall across the Midwest. I do have a question about the futures markets because we had two really hard down days after the USDA report was released on Thursday. Thursday, of course, the markets were closed on Friday. Yesterday was another hard down day. And then today, I don't know whether we want to call it Turnaround Tuesday or we just finished it all up. What do you think?
I think that it looked like a turnaround Tuesday this morning when we walked in, and it sure didn't feel like it until right at the close today when we brought things back to about unchanged. I do think that we are probably, you know, limiting some of our sell-off here at this point in time, that we maybe went down, and I can't say we've exhausted all of it, but the question is, will we turn around and bounce from here, or will we just trade sideways from here until we see that report coming out on the 10th? You know, a lot of talk about what they are going to do with the carryout for the corn on that. If we look at what they did, you know, it does pretend to over 900 million carryout in the corn, and that, of course, equates back to a much lower price in the July time period.
Indeed it does. You think that of course, there are two things at work here. NASS is one of them, which came out with the reports, the grain stocks and the planning intentions report, which were released last Thursday. And then the other side of that is the Agricultural Outlook Board, the World Ag Outlook Board, which will release the WASD numbers. They're due out the April the 10th. And I guess they have to make them work together to some extent, but they're two sets of economics.
They sure are. And the last time that we had these kind of big moves, one report sort of undid the other report a little bit, and that's the question we have to ask ourselves. I mean, do we want to be a little bit long going into that report or a little bit short if they come up with that? And I think one of the things we're going to have to really do and look at that is we're going to have to use some option strategies to handle this.
See, the last time, that would have been, what, the fall of 2010, I think? Is that correct?
Yeah, there was sort of a mysterious 300 million bushel that popped up, popped out.
Yeah, well, we'll figure out whether that happens again early on this time around in the month of April, and you're expecting that options are the best way to handle that process there.
Well, I think that, you know, that's one of the safer ways to do one of these because, you know, we are, you know, if they do actually add that 300 and some million bushel back in, it's going to put us in a situation where we were figuring well over a dollar higher is what the price should be just a week ago. And if they don't, if they pull it back on out, why, we do have a chance of rebounding 50 to 75 cents.
This, of course, would be for old crop, and it does have an impact on new crop because the carryout would change. What do you think is the difference there? We're about a dollar on old crop corn. What about new crop corn?
Well, the new crop corn, unfortunately, there isn't a dollar on the upside here, I don't think, without some weather problems, Todd. It's probably more of a 50-cent type move.
And for soybeans, they've got to adjust some of those numbers as well.
You know, that is, but there's been not near as much taken out of the beans. They've been a lot more resilient, and the stocks are still fairly tight. You know, one of the big things was that Oil World had a report today that said the worst of the Brazil shipping delays may be over for now, and that could chop into some of the U.S. Demand and also into our meal demand coming up here. But all in all, we're still got a very tight situation on the beans for this year.
What are the other outside influences impacting the grain and oilseed markets at this time?
Oh, I mean, the dollar has been tremendously big on it, Todd. As we watch it go up and down on the Cyprus situation, the gold market, just the whole world economy is going to be a very big thing. But the biggest thing of all to watch is still going to be the weather for what it's going to be, not just here in the U.S., but South America, Russia, and the different parts of the world. Because, you know, we saw that at these high prices that Russia could grow a lot of grain. We saw China come in doing things, and we saw, you know, South America just have an outstanding crop this year.
The weather rainfall that is in the forecast for a good portion of the United States, enough to alleviate some of the problems out west at this point, do you think, or at least is the marketplace considering that?
I think that it will help. Now, alleviate, no. I mean, we're still way too much in a drought situation out west of the Mississippi to say one incident or 1 week is going to alleviate it. But sure is going to be helping, and, you know, if you start out well, you need just-in-time rains, not great rains.
And then turn your attention to the Delta area. There was a time, not so long ago, within the last couple of weeks, where they were running behind trying to get grains into the ground. How have they done in those last 2 weeks?
Well, it looks like there's been some progress. There's quite a bit. You know, Louisiana's over 90% planted. Texas is up to par on where they should be. Mississippi's there. Arkansas is starting to catch up. We're even seeing some pretty good immersion rates in those states. So we are going to have some early corn available, not as much as we did last year, of course, but you know, a little bit more moisture in some of those areas might give us a better crop when it gets here.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Of course, you can hear him again if you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Couple of notes. Please do visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find links for all kinds of things, including our free weekend newsletter. A way to subscribe and unsubscribe to that, that's over on the right-hand side of the page. The USDA reports are listed there as well. And we try to update it with some information from the Extension Specialist right here on campus a bit later on the day. I'll post into that some information from entomologist Mike Gray. We'll have more of that coming up on this program, too. But you get to see and listen to Mike on our website. It's all at willag.org. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, business and labor representatives have reached a tentative agreement on how to set wages for low-skilled guest workers. The Chamber of Commerce and AFL-CIO have been negotiating the details of a new visa program that would allow a future group of immigrants to come to the U.S. to work in year-round, low-wage jobs such as landscaping and meatpacking. The agreement would require that employers would pay guest workers the same amount regular employees receive for the same job or the prevailing wage, whichever is higher. The deal is still tentative, and the two sides have other minor details to hash out. A group made up of a broad coalition of farmers, scientists, and agriculturalists is emphasizing climate adaptation strategies for agriculture and forestry in a new report being released this week. The 25 by 25 Alliance report is grounded by emphasizing the need to maintain agricultural profitability, productivity, stewardship, and self-determination for farmers. The report highlights five areas where farmers and policymakers could work on climate adaptation strategies: research, production systems and practices, risk management, decision-making tools, and outreach. Unemployment across the 17 European countries that use the euro has struck 12% for the first time since the currency was launched in 1999. Eurostat reports today that the rate in February was unchanged at 12%, but January's figure was revised up to 12% from 11.9%. Spain and Greece continue to suffer from unemployment rates above 26%. The Commerce Department today says that the manufacturing sector continued its fragmented growth in February. Orders for manufactured goods increased 3% to $491.98 billion. The factory report measures demand for both durable goods as well as products such as refined petroleum and processed foods that are utilized more quickly. February non-durable orders increased 0.8%. The growth in the category was largely due to increased petroleum and oil refineries. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can find online at willag.org or m.willag.org, or that you can listen to in part, at least for the Closing Market Report and our Opening Market Report, on your telephone. Just dial this number, 217-333-3434. We update the numbers at about 10:15 and 3:15 each and every day, Central Time. Now, up next this season, farmers in parts of Iowa and Illinois will return to the use of soil insecticides to control an insect pest. I'll have more on the evolution of the Western corn rootworm. Farmers have waged battle with the Western corn rootworm for years. Most often, this war is fought at planting time. There were decades through which the weapon of choice was simple crop rotation. And then, in the mid-1990s, the Western corn rootworm adapted. The corn planter remained the delivery method for control, but soil insecticides were applied along with the seed sown. It was the turn of the century when Monsanto introduced YieldGuard BT corn, and the soil insecticides were set aside. And today, a decade later, the Western corn rootworm has evolved, adapted, once again, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
And again, the concern is, even where we've used pyramided hybrids or where growers will be using them this year, because growers are now using primarily the seed blend approach, at a reduced refuge level, that CRY-3435-AB1 protein may be under more intense selection pressure because it's at a reduced refuge level and in those areas where resistance to the CRY-3BB1 protein has been confirmed, that Herculex-type protein 3435 is really doing most of the heavy lifting or protecting those root systems.
The YieldGuard BT adapted Western corn rootworm occurs in eastern Iowa and western and northwestern Illinois. This winter, farmers attending the University of Illinois Extension Corn and Soybean Classics were surveyed about their intentions to use BT corn and soil insecticides to control the Western corn rootworm.
Well, the results were pretty straightforward. Just about on average across all of the locations, not quite 50%, but pretty close to 50% of producers indicated that they intend to use a planting time soil insecticide along with their rootworm BT hybrid this spring. And so that's a pretty sharp increase. And, I think reasons for that primarily include, the current high commodity prices, along with the fact that they have some concern that, BT resistance may be occurring or is just around the corner in their particular area of the state.
Four of the six Illinois survey sites were in areas not yet affected by BT-resistant Western corn rootworms. The Illinois entomologist is concerned about the addition of soil insecticides back into the arsenal. He makes note the primary reason for the widespread adoption of the BT technology was to move away from insecticides. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Let's check in on the ag energy markets. Harry Cooney of GrowMark out of Bloomington, Illinois is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Harry.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. A beautiful day out there.
It is a magnificent day. Producers are probably thinking about going to the field. They may not be thinking about what they ought to do with their fuel supplies, but I bet you have been doing so.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, we hear of several areas of the state that by later this week, without without much rain in the forecast, might be able to get in the field, and hopefully they have their tanks already filled up on some previous talks that we've had. And today we had a diverging market, meaning that the gasoline market actually fell a little more than 6 cents to the downside, where the heating oil is the proxy for diesel fuel, actually rose about 2 cents. So kind of diverging patterns here. At the same time, the stock market has been strong today. Stock market has hit new highs throughout the session, right now up about 70 points, still suggesting a strong economy. But gasoline just stumbling a little bit in here and not really wanting to follow along on its seasonal trek to the upside that we would normally be seeing here at this time of the year.
I was going to ask you about the seasonal tracks. Now you're telling me that's not following it along. So what are the reasons behind that? Anything?
Well, most likely we got a little bit ahead of ourselves back in January and February on the rally. It did set back there at late February and then came higher into March. But even now, it seems like gasoline demand has been good, but just not quite as good as what traders had thought. And when you get up above $3 in the futures in gasoline, we're not talking about cheap product anymore. So to continue on higher from these levels, you really have to have some new, fresh, bullish news, and we just haven't been seeing that. A story we're keeping an eye on, though, is this North Korean, I guess you'd call it a conflict or a situation that seems to be developing over there. Each day we hear about it in the news. So far it does not appear to be affecting the markets much. I think the hope is by many of us that eventually there's some resolution, but you have this this leader over there that kind of throws out some scary signals at times, and so the markets eventually may start to look up to some of that. But for now, it seems to be staying fairly calm.
We often talk about the cycles for gasoline. Does diesel and heating oil have a cycle as well? Both, they're one and the same, relatively.
Yeah,
speaking.
Pretty much. It follows the same gasoline one, which would normally be higher out into spring and early summer. Then sometimes it takes a little respite there in early to midsummer before sometimes going on higher into fall or sometimes peaking out in midsummer. So after you get out to about midsummer, the seasonals then can kind of go either way. The best seasonal of the year tends to be the bottoming of price in December, January, and then rallying out into early to mid-spring, sometimes into early summer. So this year we did have the bottoming out there in December, but then we've just kind of hit a little bit of a speed bump here, and so now we're just kind of chopping sideways to see which way we want to move from here on.
And so that seasonal just follows the pattern of usage of gasoline, meaning that in the spring and early summer we travel a lot, and there's a lot of folks that are moving around after a long winter time, I suppose.
That's exactly right. And why it happens to start in the late winter and early spring is because a lot of middlemen are starting to get ready for that driving season that usually begins about the time the kids get out of school and the summer vacations begin. And then again, the gasoline prices can stay strong even in the late summer when they're getting ready to go back to school. But demand this year, we'll have to watch as we get out into the summer. Time right now, gasoline stocks very adequate, diesel stocks fairly tight in the U.S., but here in the Midwest, diesel stocks adequate as farmers get out in the field and get into the planting season.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney is with GrowMark. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. He joins us on a Tuesday afternoon to talk about the agricultural energy markets. In a couple of minutes, Don Day will be here to look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day. There does not seem to be any references to PBJs before 1940, but in World War II, soldiers were given rations of both peanut butter and jelly. When the war was over and GIs returned to the States, sales of peanut butter and jelly soared. By the way, the first known cookbook that contains recipes for fruit preserves was written in 14 AD. Peanut butter was invented in 1890, almost 1,900 years later. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, the periodical American Farmer was founded by John Skinner. Begun as a weekly in Baltimore, the stated purpose of the periodical was to collect information from every source on every branch of husbandry. Skinner edited American Farmer for a decade before selling the magazine in 1830. By the way, the earliest issues also included a sports column, often focusing on horses and hounds. In 1863, the Richmond Bread Riots broke out. Shortages of food caused hundreds of angry women to march on Richmond, Virginia, and then on the governor's office, and then on the government commissary. It ended in a riot when they broke into the commissary and then other shops and buildings and carried out anything they could carry. Even the hospital reported losing over 300 pounds of beef. In 1872, George Brayton received a patent for the U.S. commercial gasoline engine. Its principle of continuous ignition later became the basis for the turbine engine. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us to look at the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start right here in the eastern Corn Belt, Don. Farmers will get itchy a whole lot sooner rather than later now that the calendar has turned to the month of April. What can they expect in the weather over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I'd say it's classic April. What we're going to be looking at first is a warm-up, which everyone's been waiting for. Temperatures are going to start to rebound a little bit as a big weather system is going to develop late this week and early next week over the western half of the United States. We're going to see a reversal. We're going to see the colder weather shift more west, warmer weather shift more east. But in the transition, there is going to be a significant weather event next week right over the nation's midsection. Now, this is going to be really good news for some of the very dry areas of the Central Plains. The system, though, is going to come in and produce significant amount of rain over all of the Corn Belt, especially the southern and western areas. Really, most of the nation in the next week to 10 days has got a really good shot of precipitation, and some of it could be heavy, Todd. We're looking at 1-2 inch amounts of precipitation in some areas.
Well, that will be well received, especially in the western part of the Corn Belt, where it has remained dry at least until this time. I know one storm does not fix the long-term problem, but it is maybe the beginning, and you'll have to tell me this, of a change in real weather patterns there that could solve the drought that they've been suffering through?
Well, let's put it this way. It's going to help put a good dent into the drought. Will it erase it? No. But I think it's important to look at last year where we were. March of 2012 was one of the warmest and driest in a long time. March 2013 was much different, much more productive. And if we can get some wet systems, that's going to help here in the next month, and hopefully we'll lead into the early summer season. I don't think we're going to erase the drought, but I think we're going to be in a better position than we were a year ago.
The winter wheat crop in parts of Kansas, Oklahoma, some of the Great Plains, especially in the far northern areas, went in a really tough situation. How will it come out of dormancy, do you think?
Well, I think the next couple of weeks here is going to be pivotal. If this storm that we're seeing on our weather charts right now can come together, well, I think it is going to favor the central and southern wheat areas. I do think the northern areas are going to have a chance, Nebraska, South Dakota, to get into the mix and pick up some good precipitation. Kansas, Oklahoma, those wheat areas, I think, have got a real good shot of measurable rain and snow out of this next storm.
Just a minute left. You can either take me to South America and talk about harvest or talk about the potential season brewing there in China. Your choice.
Well, for South America, real quick, it does look wet in Brazil. I think those areas may be a little bit wet in a few spots for harvest. South America's southern areas, like Argentina, they look to be a little bit drier.
All right. Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. You have a great day.
I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks.